from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, Calvin Trillin returns to Forum to review the 2012 presidential election in rhyme. He'll discuss the turning point of the first debate with verse like this: "It got so thick, so lacking in one-liners, some people fell asleep in their recliners." Trillin's new book, tracing the 2012 presidential campaign in verse, is called Dogfight. And here it is, more verse of his: "We wonder which doodle emerge as the pit bull and which is the poodle." Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Longtime staff writer for The New Yorker, reporter, food writer, humorist, and political writer Calvin Trillin is also the deadline poet for The Nation, where he puts out doggerel verse that amuses and delights and causes him to kvetch about the woefully low fees that he's paid. He's put together a 2012 presidential campaign in verse under the title Dogfight, which takes us through the many GOP battles preceding the formal nomination of Mitt Romney and his battle for the nation's highest office against incumbent Barack Obama. Calvin Trillin joins us in studio for this morning's second Forum Hour, and always delighted to have you here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Michael.
Let me begin by throwing out a challenge to listeners in the course of the hour. Now, I'm doing this with some apprehension, I must say, before Bud and I talk about his new book and other things. We're going to invite you to let us know in verse some of your thoughts about politics, either the last election or the ongoing nature of what's going on in Washington, D.C. Just a couple lines, maybe even a limerick, something like that. I want to sort of test the waters and see how original and clever you can be. I know we'll get some awful stuff just from past experiences, but the challenge is being put out there. I'm throwing down the gauntlet here, so to speak. And you can do that simply by going to our Facebook. I hope to get some really good ones and funny ones. I'm counting on you here, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. And you can tweet us by using our Twitter handle, which is at KQED Forum. So there are a number of ways that you can do this. Limerick, maybe even a haiku, whatever strikes you as something you want to say about politics in a humorous vein and about the election, because that's really what Calvin Trillin's new book is all about. And boy, it takes us through the parade. You know, you forget as time goes by, Bud, about how many people were trying to sort of depose or dispose of Romney.
Every single one of them front runner. there weren't any joke candidates, or they were all joke candidates, because just about everybody who took part in the early debates was at one time or another the front runner. Michelle Bachmann, even Donald Trump.
Yeah, and you go through the whole list of them. Michelle Bachmann, Palin minus Moose, I like. But also comparing the Palins to the Kardashians with the Northwoods angle.
Right. We sort of miss, Sarah, in the last campaign I did a Sarah Palin singing an old Barbara Streisand classic, "On a Clear Day I See Vladivostok."
You've got some songs in here, too. You've got a set of Edelweiss, Adelson.
Yes, and there's Michelle, my bell, thinks that gays will all be sent to hell. That's our bell.
There are two Michelle Bell songs in here.
Yes, yeah. And then and a poem when Michelle Bachmann said that Hurricane Irene had been sent by God because of government overspending, the hurricane that devastated the Northeast. And I did a poem called "Why Be So Hard on Vermont."
That was one of your great rhymes, by the way, Avant and Vermont. Now, how many minds can come up with that? Although I think my favorite, I wondered what you were going to do with Obama other than Osama, and you got Yokohama, but I think Commandant and
And Vermont.
Commandant and Vermont. No, wait a minute. Commandant and Vermont, right, but there's Commentariat and Iscariot. Now, that was...
Oh, that's right.
That's a jewel.
Yeah, that's right. Obama, I had used up all the rhymes with Osama bin Laden, Yokohama, as you mentioned, slap your mama.
We're trying to get doggerel back to some elevated level here. Has it
or
been
non-elevated,
too much?
Non-elevated level. It's been dissed by the people that we call the Sanskrit crowd, the people who, or my family calls real poets or grown-up poets. And when I say we, I mean those of us who are members of the International Deadline Poets Organization, IDPO.
Would I recognize other names in that illustrious?
There's only one other member, and that's John Alamang, who writes for the Toronto Globe and Mail. That's how it's international. He's Canadian. And
well, but you're two months Canadian? Yourself?
Yeah, I'm almost Canadian. But we have actually he still writes for the Globe and Mail, but his poems don't appear anymore. So we would say that his IDPO membership is hanging by a thread, except that would be a metaphor, and we discourage metaphors.
you know The Stuffed Owl, by the way, that anthology of bad poetry?
I don't, no. Yeah. I like those sorts of contests. There was one last week on the most awkward and embarrassing sex scene in a 2012 novel.
What came out on top? On top or on bottom? Or
I can't remember who was on top, but I know that 50 Shades of Grey was disqualified because pornography is not eligible.
Have you read any of that book, by the way?
This will really surprise you, Michael. I have not read any of 50 Shades. When you say any of, I suppose you're talking about the dirty parts, right?
No, I just read a few pages, and the style of writing was so appalling that I couldn't and I'm not a snob about these things. I just couldn't get past. It's about as bad as it gets.
Well, the people at Random House are extremely happy about it. They gave bonuses this year.
Extremely happy is putting it mildly. Would you do us the honor of maybe reading "Let the Barking and Biting Begin," which kind of sets the tone for your?
Yeah, this is the epigraph. Mitt Romney put Seamus on top of the car. He liked it up there, and we weren't going far. Obama in boyhood while in Indonesia once swallowed some dog meat without anesthesia. Though dog lovers wouldn't be either man's base, a dog fight seemed what was in store for their race. And people were saying, "We wonder which doodle emerge as the pit bull and which is the poodle." The book ends with the same sort of we're not going to say metaphor because we don't do metaphors, but same sort of theme. It says, but in just 30 months, it starts again. Before that time, the handlers will unpin new candidates who they think have the grit to do ferocious battle in the pit, and pampered billionaires whose charm consists of wads of dirty money in their fists will on the sidelines scrutinize the pack, deciding which competitor to back. About to battle for the laurel wreath, the candidates will growl and bare their teeth. Dogfight.
Oh, well, it's already started. I think it started back before this election was over, when Chris Christie talked more about Chris Christie than he did about about the candidate. But you've already got to, is it going to be Jindal? Is it going to be Rubio? The pundits love to get Jeb Bush in motion already.
I think if it hadn't been for the fiscal cliff, it would be the big subject on the Sunday talk shows among the people. I always call the Sabbath gas bags.
Yeah, I love that term, the Sabbath gas bags. You've resurrected that in this book, as you have the George H.W. Term about Big Mo.
I'm trying to sneak Sabbath gas bags into the language.
I think it may already be there. It certainly is in your work, and many of us have read your work, and I find myself occasionally using Sabbath gas bags. I also...
Oh, that's good. But what I ask is, don't say, as Calvin Trillin says, Sabbath gas bag, but just Sabbath gas bag. That's the way to ease it into the language.
It's a little metaphoric, though, isn't it? Gas bags?
I hadn't thought of that. We'll bring that up at the next meeting of IDPO.
All right. I hope you do. We were together last night at an event at the North Theater that Sidney Goldstein put on, and talking about humorists that you like. You were speaking very highly of Jon Stewart, of a novelist who I've been an admirer of Canadian novelist Mordecai Richler for many, many years. You like Borowitz? And there's a reason I'm asking.
I do like Borowitz, yeah.
So do I.
I think he's very funny. And I saw him at the New Yorker Festival a couple of years ago, and he was talking about being pulled aside for a search at the airport, and there was a male TSA person and a female, and he said, "Can she search me?" and the male said, no, she searches women. And he said, "Can I watch?" He's very funny. And he does a regular political performance at the 92nd Street Y in New York with a panel. And I sometimes am on the panel. And he's remarkably funny.
Well, the reason I ask is he put out a column, and for a moment, just recently, I thought you were talking about the dogfight already beginning. He said it's already a shoo-in. Hillary, not only for two terms, but also changing the Constitution and going beyond those two terms. there's not much Ron Paul in here.
I know. I was thinking about that. I have him. I talk about him being erratic like some crazy uncle come down from the attic, something like that, but not very much. I guess he's the only person in the race who never was the front runner, although he was pretty close. He actually came just a couple of points behind Bachman in the Iowa straw poll, and but I think nobody thought he, including him, nobody thought he was going to win the nomination. So I don't say much about him. I sort of admired his consistency. Although the government should stay out of your business and let you do everything you want to, didn't extend to abortion in his case.
You've also got the whole challenge with certain names. Paul is a name that's easy to rhyme, but you've come up against, like Bush, I think only Tush.
Tush, which I consider disrespectful. And when George H.W. Bush left office, I wanted to do a poem for him. I realized he had a lot of middle names, so I said, "Farewell to you, George Herbert Walker, though never treasured as a talker. Your predicates were often prone to wander nounless, off alone. You did your best in your own way, the way of Greenwich Country Day. So just relax and take your ease and never order Japanese." I get sentimental when they leave.
Yes, we're talking to Calvin Trillin, author of Dogfight, the 2012 presidential campaign in verse. And again, I'm putting out a challenge to listeners. If you like to give us just a couple lines, a verse that you think is original, clever, worthy of the likes of Calvin Trillin, please feel free to do that. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post it on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. At KQED Forum. And by the way, I want to give out the number, and I've already given out ways to communicate verse with us, but if you'd like to talk to Calvin Trillin, you are certainly welcome to do that as well, questions or comments. Many admirers of his are here in the Bay Area and always appreciate his wit and his verve, and you are certainly welcome to join us. In fact, you can do that by phone. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us if you'd like to speak to Calvin Trillin, always known as Bud. Where did that nickname come from, by the way?
Nobody knows. I think it's one of the many subjects my father and I never had a real heart-to-heart about, but I've always assumed that he thought that the name he gave me, he thought incorrectly that the name he gave me, Calvin, would sound good at Yale, and he wanted me to go to Yale. I told him, I did tell him at one point if he was going to put on airs, he should have put on Episcopalian airs instead of Presbyterian airs, but I don't think he knew about John Calvin.
I'm getting, you want to hear some of sampling of what we're getting here?
I'm desperate to hear.
Well, here is Camilo, who tweets, "When the pundits fail, only two bring us the news, Stewart and Colbert." Well, it just asked about political stuff. Here's a tweet as a haiku. "Fiscal cliff is near, no compromises in sight. Tax pledge has chokehold." Alice tweets, "My Trillin-esque poem, downy fluff of cotton candy, Trump's hair, wispy swirls, has more substance than his gaseous thoughts." okay. One more. Richard writes, if democracy beats all the alternatives, I'd hate to try them. Okay, these are welcome. A little right. better than that, we hope, but it's not bad for original kind of tries. Yeah?
That's more like grown-up poetry, though. It's not just rhyme. I mean, deadline poets, at least members of IDPO, are very conscious about rhyme. And occasionally people say to me, here's a good rhyme for you, and they give me one that doesn't quite rhyme. I say, it doesn't quite rhyme. And he said, almost rhymes. And I say, rhyme's all I've got.
Yeah, it wasn't intending to insult the listeners there, by the way. It's just we have a high level here, a high bar with Bud Schilling.
I think there was some intention there to insult the listeners.
No, I never insult my listeners. that wouldn't be appropriate or even nice, for that matter. By the way, Patootie and Duty, I thought, was also
thank you.
Fairly original.
I think patootie is a word that we don't hear enough of these days. It's kind of an old-fashioned word.
You want to bring it back without your name being mentioned?
Well, I think it's already in the language, but I think that couplet is about the Iowa caucuses held in bitter, cold weather in January, and I said, to listen to long speeches is your duty. And getting there might freeze off your patootie.
Yes. You know, you notice things. And it's a poetic eye, regardless of your disdain for metaphor. You notice things that others would not notice here. For example, Rick Perry in the cowboy boots. Now, first of all, I didn't know that he was in the cotton business. So therefore, why should he be wearing cowboy boots? Or somehow the connection never came to mind.
Well, Rick Perry went to Texas A&M, and his family had a cotton farm, and he, for several years, ran the cotton farm. And so why was he in cowboy boots? Because you don't need horses to plant cotton. And that poem says if he really wanted to be authentic, he should be in bib overalls.
Could you be kind enough to read this poem about his hair, since we're talking about Rick Perry early on in the election book?
This is called Enter Rick Perry. With even more impressive hair than Kerry, at last into the race arrives Rick Perry. Though Perry's blessed, no doubt, with splendid hair, he believes some things that strike some folks as scary. Observers down in Texas still are wary. The space beneath the hair, they say, is airy.
There's also prose in this collection of doggerel and songs. There is a piece about Callista Gingrich and her dengue fever and cough. There's a piece about President Romney and about Santorum homeschooling. Now, do these just sort of come to you in the midst of your rhyming process, or do they come to you apart from that?
Well, these are like the poems that are embedded in the main poem here, are most of those. Were written during the campaign. And this was in the Callista Gingrich piece was in the New Yorker. It's called Callista Gingrich, aware that her husband has cheated on and then left two wives who had serious illnesses, tries desperately to make light of a bad cough.
That comes by inspiration then. Huh?
Yeah, I think that was an inspiration.
The Santorum poem, sort of at the end of his attempt to, unseat Romney, really, as the front runner. I wanted to bring that into the fray here because it's the race will miss. Do you mind if I read it? The race will miss the purity that you alone endow. We'll never find another man who's holier than thou.
Yeah,
so cogent.
I thought that was Santorum. We found ourselves talking about contraception, an issue that most people think was settled with Griswold v. Connecticut in about 50 years ago. So only Santorum, I think, could find himself shocked at that.
Let's we have a caller here named Irene who has a Calvin Trillin poem. Is that right, Irene?
It's a little tribute to Mr. Trillin. Calvin Trillin's droll and sweet. He makes me laugh and want to eat. Thank you for all the laughs, Mr. Trillin.
Thank you. That poem actually had rhyme and meter.
Yes. That was very nice, Irene. Thank you for that.
City College English major.
So that's it. You took the rhyme and meter Deadline Poet course, probably.
Right. Thank you very much for all your wonderful work.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling. And again, Calvin Trillin here with us in studio, regular writer since 1963 for The New Yorker and author of Dogfight, the 2012 presidential campaign in verse. And I'm not only inviting you as listeners to let us know what verse you have to offer, particularly about the election of 2012, but an opportunity to talk to one of our great wits and, one of the two international deadline poets who are out there. I mean, what an opportunity to have a conversation or to bring questions or comments to him in that role or any of his other roles. And again, we invite your calls at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. I think I have someone here with a limerick. Let's try this. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Okay. I have a limerick. I don't know if it's up to the level of Calvin, but I'll give it a shot.
Oh, please.
All right. There once was a man named Barack. About him, Republicans did mock. But he had the last laugh with Romney's gaffe after gaffe to make his second term a lock.
Well,
yeah. I like it. Thank you. In fact, you talk about what gave Obama the lock. It was being able to count.
Absolutely. I think I wrote a little piece after the election, and I said that old-time Paul's urban regulars who wanted to say something admiring about somebody who they thought understood how everything worked would say, "The man can count." That was the phrase. And Barack Obama's people could count and did it in a kind of a positive way. I have a poem that I wrote after the election called Republican Soul Searching. We're searching our souls and we're wondering why we got beat so badly, our rivals are gloating. It's obvious now where our campaign went wrong. We should have prevented more people from voting. Well, I mean, you know, if one side's looking for the people sympathetic to their cause and trying to get them to the polls, and the other side is simply trying to get those people not to vote in some way, it's not an even playing field.
Well, you even say in that essay you alluded to that it seemed like the Republicans were intent on driving voters away, whether they were Latinos or African Americans or college educated, and you said it was like they brought in a consultant to. Have them say things about how rape is not an unmitigated evil, which
right.
almost did seem to be the case.
There's a poem in here called The Female Reproduction System, The Female Reproductive System by Todd Akin, a member of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology.
You want to hold that poem? And
yeah.
Because we're up on a break here, and we'd like to hear it when we come back. And we'd like to hear from you, by the way, not only if you can try to reach this high bar that Bud Trillin has set in the world of doggerel, but if you'd just like to talk with him, you are certainly welcome to participate. Toll-free number 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. And you're listening to Forum. The new book by Bud Trillin is Dogfight, the 2012 presidential campaign in verse. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny with Calvin Trillin returning to Forum this hour, reviewing his 2012 presidential election in rhyme. I shouldn't say his 2012, yours as well, the 2012 American presidential election, and talking about the presidential election and other things with him. And you are certainly welcome to join us, author, humorist, staff writer for The New Yorker since 1963. And the book, again, is titled Dogfight, the 2012 presidential campaign in verse. We do welcome your involvement in the program, toll-free. 866-733-6786 or email forum@kqed.org. We went right to that break, and you were going to read. We were talking about the notion that rape did come in a very big way in this election.
Yeah, there's a poem here called Three Republican Candidates Discourse on the Subject of Rape, and a Fourth Remains Exceedingly Quiet. Legitimate rape, so we're told by Todd Akin, will not produce children but simply awaken defensive biology that quickly locks the system all down, just as safe as Fort Knox. Joe Walsh says exceptions for life of the mother are phony exceptions, just like all the other exceptions suggested. Walsh says it's all jive, since doctors can always keep mama alive. Now Murdoch says rapist seeds must be defended. A pity, he says, but it's what God intended. This absolute stance to which Murdoch still cleaves just happens to be what Paul Ryan believes. The Rape Science 3 can provide more reminders that now Mitt's got wing nuts in all of those binders.
Boy, you know, you read through this as I did, and you realize the shelf life of not only these Republican candidates, right. But some, I mean, the binders thing, for example, it was...
Binders was all over the place.
Absolutely.
I mean, I thought the interesting thing about the binders is that that was just obviously kind of an, as usual, awkward way of describing something. But the fact is, it apparently wasn't true that he had asked for the binders. A women's group in Massachusetts, and I saw the woman interviewed, gave all the candidates binders of people who women who were qualified for various offices. So the whole thing was not true, in addition to being weird.
The other thing I was going to ask you about in your essay, you talk about your fantasy that the person who videotaped the infamous 47% to Florida fundraisers that got Romney in considerable hot water with voters, that you fantasize that it was supposed to be a woman, and you fantasize it was some guy's, rich guy's wife, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, this was a group of rich donors, and some people think, well, it must have been a waiter or something, but I like to think it was one of the fat cat's wives, and she hates her husband. She likes the house in Boca Raton. She likes the Lexus. She loves the private plane. But she hates her husband.
This kind of imagination that I said, you should be writing another novel. You should. You got to bring back Tepper. I really enjoyed that novel. It's still out, isn't it?
Tepper, yeah. Or I could turn it into a sort of a he was leaving for England at the end of the last book, and I could turn it into a sort of 50 Shades of Grey.
You have one of those in you think?
Probably not.
No. Years and years ago, I thought, write a potboiler. It might be fun. And right. Can't do it unless you're really into the
story. It's absolutely true. I mean, the idea that if you write something else, you'd be able to write that is because it's not very good writing. It turns out not to be true.
I mean, people, I think about Jackie Suzanne and Sidney Sheldon and Irving Wallace. I mean, they were really into their stories. You know?
That's right. Although, you know, when I always say that that the average shelf life of a book in America is somewhere between milk and yogurt,
yes.
and books by people like Dan Brown and Daniel Steele and Sidney Sheldon have a longer shelf life, but they contain preservatives.
Speaking about shelf lives, what do you put on your political analyst hat for a minute? I'm just interested to hear what you think about the prospects are of a redefined or rejuvenated or even ongoing existing Republican Party.
Well, I think that about at least three or four times in my memory, people have said, people like the Sabbath Gasbags have said the Republican Party is dead. They can't exist anymore. Certainly after Johnson's landslide over Goldwater, they said that. They said that in 2008 after Obama won. And now they say it again. I think that Marco Rubio had a point when in a speech a couple of days ago when he said that Latinos, for instance, are in some ways a natural constituency for Republicans. They're hardworking in general. Some of them are entrepreneurial. They're tied to church and family. But I think in a way the Republicans sort of sold themselves to Jesus. And now they're in a position where they have to explain why they're so interested in defending tax the low taxes for rich people that they'll go over the fiscal cliff rather than give on that point. So there is a kind of a funny death wish feeling about it, but I think 2 years is a lifetime. Because remember, after everybody said they were done in 2008, and I happened to read while I was doing research for this book, I happened to read a prediction made by one of the people who appears on television and analyzes things and everything. He said, there is absolutely no way the Republicans can win back the House in 2010. It's not that it's a small percentage. It's not that it's unlikely. There is no way. Well, of course, they won by a lot. So I think it's dangerous. When I was doing that series around the country, I only did elections after they were over. I mean, I wrote after they were over, so I was never wrong.
But I wonder, when I ask about the ongoing life of the Republican Party, I'm really thinking more about, is there room in the Republican Party for a moderate wing as there was for so many years? You know, Javits Republicans and Lindsey Republicans. I mean, they don't seem to be existing anymore, especially because of the Tea Party. You know?
Yeah, they can't win the primaries. And in fact, Barry Goldwater, who arguably was the beginning of this round of conservatism in America, couldn't get a Republican nomination now. He was I can't remember, either had a grandson or a nephew or something who was gay, and he was cool about gay people. He had gone back to Planned Parenthood when he got back to Arizona. Barry Goldwater was to the left of the Republican Party now.
Here's Mark, who says, Republicans are all in a funk. The polls they were reading just stunk. They really believed, but now feel aggrieved because their pundits' predictions were bunk.
Well, now that's both rhyme and meter.
Yeah, right. Okay, we'll hear some more. Well, let's go to some calls. Well, actually, Jim, you have a Trump poem, do you?
I do.
Let's hear it.
So my Trump poem is Trump on Twitter calling for revolt proves himself a total dolt. For his like minds, his red meat would hardly know a coup from a tweet.
Oh, Calvin's smiling, and that's a good sign. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Let me go some more of these emails. Max says, it all started with a bang, Santorum, Gingrich, and Kaine. $9.99 seemed like a good line. Oh, primaries, what a pain. Then it was over and the real fight began, a bitter loss for Romney, even if Rush thinks he won. Begun and won. Yeah, okay, we got that. Caitlin writes, wages are low, decidedly so, and people are starting to wonder, do they care about us on Capitol Hill where bravado booms louder than thunder? Kevin says, it's very well for us to laugh about our country torn in half, and yet I wonder if you know to what degree it's all for show, a circus farce to hide uncertain, the oligarchs behind the curtain. That's actually a pretty good line,
yeah.
Oligarchs behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And Paul says the election
is...
That's almost
a metaphor.
Almost, a borderline metaphor. Paul from Oakland says, the election is over at last. What once was the future is past. But leave on your coat and get ready to vote just as soon as the last hat is passed. Hmm. Quality here. Josh tweets, would that I were such a stud to tweet verse worthy of our bud.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, I knew you'd like that one.
You didn't mention dashing in that one, though. I would have, or dashing bud would have been better.
A dashing bud.
If you're going to say stud, you should say dashing.
Dashing bud makes me think of beer, though.
Right.
Here's Mark, who says, Michael, please don't take it hard. Your modest listeners can't match the bard. Now, did you ever think that you would be called the bard? You asked for Ernest Stabb's adverse. You must admit it could be worse. Hi, Michael. Hi, Mr. Trillin. Any plans for Ter Duncan this Christmas?
No, I'm going to be in Mexico this Christmas, and turducken hasn't made it to Mexico.
Why do you suppose that is the case?
Well, because Mexicans would think it's disgusting, I think.
You're talking about disgusting food. Some things do come readily to mind, don't they?
Yeah. Turducken, I have to say, is not to everybody's taste, which is turducken, as you probably know, is they debone a turkey and put stuffing in it. Then they debone a duck and put the duck with stuffing inside the turkey and then a chicken inside the duck, or maybe vice versa. I can't remember. But it's
pretty foul. Yeah.
Ooh. And you're definitely not an Ed Poe.
Never make the grade. Actually, a question from a listener, speaking about food for the moment. Where will Mr. Trilling be eating on his trip to the Bay Area?
Well, I'm about to leave, so I won't be eating anywhere.
Well, you had that fried chicken last night. It was pretty good.
I did have some fried chicken, yeah. And I had for breakfast some congee on Stockton Street. I don't know the name of the place. It was the place with a line in front of it.
You think of, when you think of Bay Area or San Francisco restaurants that you particularly like, what or love even, what comes to mind?
I like the place on Stockton Street with a line in front of it.
Okay. Let me get some more calls on here. And Alex, you're our caller next. Hi.
Hello. How the primary Perry's tongue twisted so very, all tied up in loops, not when deploying our troops, but when dismantling departments of oops.
Departments of oops?
This was a Rick Perry reference, yeah. Dot, 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 oops, I believe.
That's good, Alex. Thank you for that. I think we're getting to a higher grade here.
Well, even though I've appreciated some of these, I haven't put in a call to the admissions committee of IDPO to see if we could get some of these people memberships in the International Deadline Poets Organization.
But you will if you hear the one that really...
I might. We tend to... You know, the last two-man organization I belonged to was when I was doing New Yorker reporting pieces around the country for 15 years. And Jules Lowe, a wonderful reporter for the AP, was doing a similar series. And we had the American Association of American Correspondents covering America. GLINGPAC was our acronym. And... there was just the two of us. Our headquarters was O'Hare Airport. And we only had one rule, which was you can't quote de Tocqueville. That's how we kept the membership down.
Do you have a favorite in this collection that would be, you know, sort of a showcase poem for the Id Group or, expresses quintessential
I'll read what I was told by a grown-up poet is called a mono rhyme, which is a rhyme, which is a poem which all the lines have the same rhyme. And this is about Mitt Romney in his home state of Michigan saying, "I love this state. It seems right here. The trees are the right height. Away from here, I find no trees that please. No trees at such a perfect height as these. For me, I cannot ever be at ease with trees that grow no higher than one's knees, or two tall trees that splinter in a freeze. Wisconsin sure has bragging rights on cheese, and California's rich in Cantonese, and Colorado's where to take your skis. Connecticut, of course, has Lyme disease. At none of these am I prepared to sneeze, but here we have the perfect height of trees. I know that I will never see a sight as lovely as a tree whose height is right."
Inspired by Joyce Kilmer, no less. Yes.
Absolutely.
I think that I shall never see a poem as
lovely. Famous New Jersey poet.
So when are you going to try your hand at a villanelle?
Well, that's down the road a bit.
Let me get Lester on. Lester, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hi, this is an election haiku. Read all about it. Dystopia averted. Truth and hope prevail.
Okay, that's right. And stentorian voice.
Yes, done as a declamation. I like that.
Yeah. Do you like haiku?
I'm not much on haiku. I'm not actually much on grown-up poetry in general.
What's the old Woody Allen line about William Butler Yeats wrote all that poetry just so he could be obscure or something along those lines? Let me get another caller on here. Stephen, hi.
Hello. An honor this is, and a moment quite thrilling, to call into forum and be heard by Trillin. With Syria claiming their bombs are not scud, the news of the day is that Mike calls him Bud.
Well, quite worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that, Stephen. But we still don't have any invitees.
The real strict deadline poetry wouldn't use Thrillin and Trillin is a rhyme because we don't drop the G's unless we're writing about drop G's.
Really, that's a rule? I mean, a cardinal rule? No G-dropping?
Rhyme's all we've got.
Ann, join us. Hi, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Mr. Trillin, I just want to thank you for inspiring me because I have done a lot of poetry. I'm old. My name is Gigi for Great Grandma. And I stopped doing it, so now I'm going to do it again. But here's the one for you. When I think of the election, it really doesn't need detection. I truly know it's all baloney. Politicians are quite often phony.
Thank you, Gigi.
Yeah, wisdom from you. Thank you, indeed. What is, like, a rhyme that you've particularly, in this collection, grappled over or was vexing to you that you particularly felt like there was almost a, I'm sorry to use this as a metaphor, but it's in all kinds of cartoons, like a light bulb went off above your head after the struggle? And
I'm not sure, unless it was the one we mentioned, Duty and Patootie. It's hard to think of rhymes like sometimes I didn't use as much foreign language in this book for some reason. I like the idea. Years ago, I rhymed MS DOS with Michigas, for instance, but that didn't turn up. And of course, the people had good nicknames. Newt and Mitt and Rick, and that helped, so I didn't need some really fancy rhymes as much.
No struggle like with Blagojevich.
Oh, no, I did a poem with Blagojevich, but I was terrified that he would enter the 2008. It seems amazing now to think of that, but he was talked about, mentioned, as they say. And this is called On the Auctioning Off of Barack Obama's Senate Seat. It seemed to Rod Blagojevich a powerful appointment, which was his to make should make him rich. His plan turned out to have a glitch. Perhaps the feds had flipped a snitch. So much for Rod Blagojevich.
And we'll bring on some more of your calls. We go up to Forestville and welcome you, Redmond. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I just want to tell you that the first two lines of my eight-line poem came in a dream last week, and so I went to my computer and wrote the rest of it. Here we go. Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yes.
Quell avarice, then ask me this. Why? What vapid force endorsed the course of this decision when all around our souls profound, locked to ground, loaded down by their possessions? Hoarders follow orders to gather and store evermore until their floor is hidden. Corporate need breeds the creed for perpetual greed. We become our possessions. Our possessions become us. We are what we drive, where we live, what we wear. Our true self is lost, locked inside, cast aside. We project from outside. I am my clothes, my spouse, my house.
Now, this is what we call an epic poem,
last,
I think.
One last line. One
he claims
last line.
It's 28 lines.
One last line. The arrow of self comes from within, so quell avarice. Then ask me this. Why?
Well, and it all started with a dream.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Do you get a lot of people writing and sending you verse?
Well, sometimes people write to the Nation when they want to comment on my verse or complain about it. And I find that usually quite comforting because just about the time I'm beginning to think I'm the worst poet in the world, some evidence to the contrary is presented on the letters page of the Nation. So I don't mind when people do it.
Well, Dave writes, push rhymes with bush, and some folks say mush in rhyme with it too, and whoosh more. Some folks say smush, meaning to crush, deform, or malform, kind of slangy for poetry, but on a deadline, hey, who cares?
I cared. I would go with push, but not mush, because that's mush is what he's talking about.
Here's Michelle who says, perhaps like some Mormon, Mitt was apt to bore man, and just to cover all the bases, offending women and the young of all races, supporters of Romney committed all sorts of calumny. Romney and calumny?
No.
That's a stretch. Calumny's a good word, though. I like it.
Calumny's a nice word. You don't hear it as much. It was like patootie. You don't hear it nearly as much as you should.
Never thought of those two quite in terms of rarity of our lexicon. Monica writes, Clinton stood upon the stage, spoke of numbers like a sage. Barack must have begun to drool over the 4 years that he had to rule. On the other hand, he must have thought of what with women Bill had wrought. In truth, Bill did us all a favor, and Hillary will be completely abler. I wish we could see your facial expressions here. I can. Let me go to a couple of calls here, and we go to you, Seth. Hi.
Hi. Your campaign was witless, and so we are mittless.
Okay.
That's nice, short one. I like the short ones.
We like the brevity.
And since I get paid $100 a poem, no matter how long the poem is, that would have been a very lucrative poem if I had written it.
You can't get Katrina to raise that rate of yours, can you?
No. Well, I haven't really asked lately.
Maybe. I mean,
you think it's time?
I think it's time, yeah. Especially,
it's only been since 1990 that I... So what is that, 31, 32 years?
Think of the change in inflation rate.
No, it's only 22 years.
Yeah, but there's still, you're entitled to
a raise every
a maybe, cola type
every 22 years.
Marga, hi, welcome.
Hello. So delighted. I got two lines, and I want to have more, but they said maybe you could help. My two lines are, does the fiscal cliff exist, or is it a metaphoric twist? And I meant because I never hear either party talking about needing to support or help the poor who are now supporting the country with local sales taxes and stuff.
I've never written a poem on local sales tax. It's just beyond my reach.
What about the fiscal cliff?
I haven't done one of those yet either. I just got so sick of hearing people talk about it that I didn't want to add to the clatter, but I guess I will sooner or later.
Do you think, I mean, put on your political analyst hat again, you think there is really a fiscal cliff?
That I don't know. I'm a little weak on economics. I always say it's partly because of my math, you know, that my worst subject when I wasn't able to persuade my mathematics teachers that many of my answers were meant ironically. And I've remained weak, and so I don't really understand the economics very well. But I guess I'll take their word for it. There's the fiscal cliff. And
well, what does your gut tell you? Are we headed toward Greece or some kind of future in that way?
No, I don't think we're headed toward Greece. I think they'll have to come together, and as I say, if the Republicans find themselves just willing to do that in order to protect the tax rate of the top 2% of the country, I think it's a sort of a doomed strategy.
Listener has a process question.
Right.
Does Mr. Trillin write down rhymes as they occur to him, even if he doesn't necessarily know the context in which he'll use it?
No, I've never done that. It's probably a good idea. I've just never done it.
Peter writes, we have a chill prez named Obama, whose first debate made for such drama. His sparring with Mitt caused many a fit. I wish he had made me feel calmer. you're smiling, but you're like, calmer?
Well, somebody like Cole Porter sometimes did things like that in rhymes. I mean, he'd say, it's oak. Instead of okay and things like that. Comma, I don't know.
Well, here's Tom who says, in trying to topple Hussein, the right wing was driven insane. They lacked all decorum, even floated Santorum and a crazy dude named Herman Cain. There was Bachman and Perry and Trump and an old libertarian grump, plus a dude named Pawlenty, but away they all wenty, though Gingrich continued to stump. In the end, it was Romney who won, but no matter how hard this is spun, you can't win an election if your plank's a rejection of half of the country. That's dumb.
That's pretty good, I think.
Yeah, he could almost apply, yeah?
Could apply.
I never thought,
We're
Adam,
pretty
right?
strict on admissions.
Yeah, I know. It's tough.
We haven't let anybody in yet.
Well, the bar is so high, as I said earlier. Adam writes, I never thought I'd miss the drama of Mitt's attacks on Prez Obama, but all this talk of fiscal cliff really makes me miss the stiff. Okay, we go to Diane. Diane, join us.
I wanted to say that of all the candidates in that pack, I sure hope none comes back, except the one who lives with his in-law mama, and that's my favorite. Obama.
Okay. Thank you, Diane. And Chris writes, in politics, this isn't a rhymer, so
right.
You have to endure it. But he says, in politics, talk may be cheap, but rhyme doesn't pay.
I could certainly second that.
You would attest to that. And let's try to get one more caller on here, and that's you, Gary. Hi.
Good morning. Your guest, by coincidence, mentioned the phrase auctioning off in the last poem he read parts of. I voted for the president both times because I thought he would be less likely or less prone to cronyism, and now I hear that he may be giving away ambassadorships to reward large fundraisers or fundraisers that people have helped raise a lot of funds for him. If that occurs, can we possibly hope for either a New Yorker article or a poem that has the terms, the words cronyism and wrong in the title?
Well, you probably wouldn't. You might get cronyism in the title, but not in one of the lines, since that's a difficult word. Wrong is easy enough, sure. And I don't know. I didn't know about. I assume that all administrations find somebody other than the hottest career foreign service guy to send to Luxembourg or the Court of St. James, someplace like that. But I didn't know that there was any particular move to do that by Obama.
Well, we're going to have to close it there. Always a delight to have you. Calvin Trillin's new book, again, is Dogfight, the 2012 Presidential Campaign in Verse. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And Forum is with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. It's produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Bradley Davis, Reva Gold, Nora McCartan, and Gina Shalaba. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.